Welcome to the West Highland Way Race Podcasts. I'm John Kinnaston and this is episode 34. Welcome to the... In this episode, we've got three main items. First of all, we've got a blog post of the week. This time I've read out one from Dale Jameson from his blog, neverbeenarunner.blogspot.co.uk. And then the second item is an interview I did with David McClure a couple of weeks ago now. And we're following David's progress to his first West Highland Way race. And this interview, the second one we've done in the little series, and he recounts how he's gone so far in that 4 to 5 weeks and then his plans for the next number of weeks. So again, hopefully you'll find that helpful. And then the main item for this podcast is an interview I did last night with Caroline Mackay. Caroline ran the West Highland Way race last year and had a tough time in the weather, as many people did. And Caroline goes into details of how she got through that and what she learned from it, which I think you'll find helpful. And then also Caroline has got a big challenge for this year, but I won't spoil the interview, because she talks about what that is in the in our discussion. So three items: blog post of the week, interview with David McClure, and then an interview with Caroline Mackay. I hope you enjoy. My blog post of the week this week is from Dale Jameson. His blog is neverbeenarunner.blogspot.co.uk. And I thought this one was interesting because often my blog posts of the week that I choose are upbeat ones with people doing well and having good runs and the rest of it. But this one was a little different in the sense that Dale's had to drop out of the West Highland Way race this year, and this blog just sort of talked a little bit about that. And I thought there are others in a similar situation, so I thought it might be helpful to hear. This was written on Sunday, the 3rd of March, 2013, and is entitled A Touch of Class. It's been almost 5 weeks since I stopped running. In that time, I've inevitably been reflecting on something that will just not go away. Will hard work, hard graft, and determination ever be enough, or do I need talent for this game? I think I have my answer. I'm in my mid-30s, married with two young kids, have a full-time job, and I've been studying hard in the last 4 to 5 years as I bid to become a chartered building surveyor. In that time period, I have taken up running and have very little history in the sport apart from the requirement to be relatively fit whilst I served in the army for 9 years. What was the point of that last paragraph? Think about someone you know who might be in similar circumstances. When I do, I can think of no one else mad enough to take so much on. Well, maybe both consignees, but I'll come back to why I believe may work for them. Looking around at big running events, I see all age groups and people from all walks of life, but a closer look reveals something interesting. Without being disrespectful to those not mentioned here, I believe that most of those who take it seriously are broadly categorized as the young without kids, the same age as me without kids, or kids who have grown into adolescence, and the older without kids, or with kids who have flown the nest. My relationship with running has been a torrid affair, probably in no small part due to my self-demanding and competitive nature. Looking back, there is a recurring theme: injury, illness, and a dogged determination to keep trying. Early last year, I told my wife that I was going to give the running one last chance. So after 4 years of refusing to spend any money on running, because we had none, I persuaded my wife to let me spend what little savings we had for a training program from an ultra running coach and a tailored nutrition program from a nationally recognized body. In addition, I invested in all the gear and any injury prevention gadget I could get my hands on, and bought a whole host of books to inform my brain. Prior to starting the training, I was as primed as I had ever been. Then 8 weeks into the program, just as I was beginning to pat myself on the back for finally doing things properly, I got injured again. I ploughed on for 3.5 months, trying this and trying that, and then just got to the stage where I had to hold my hands up. In the 5 weeks that have passed, I've honestly not missed running. I don't know if this is because I am 5 weeks into a new thing, which will be reported on in 7 weeks' time, or if I've genuinely had enough of this struggle. In times like this, I ask myself what it is that I truly miss about running. Without question, it's the freedom of running trails and in the mountains, and in my putting myself. My blog post of the week this week is from Dale Jemison, To the Limit of My Potential. These are things I cannot do injured, but they are the very things I know I must keep aiming for. For this hard graft and determination are all that are required. The problem with this comes when you enter events and undertake challenges which have time limits and are flooded with other competitors. You are provided with a tangible record of where you stand. Ultras are fantastic at exposing you for who you are. Excuses only wash for so long. So with the thought of the last 5 weeks spinning around, I read this blog by Andy Bowden. I have my answer. Allow me to summarise. Class is permanent. Form is temporary. If you want to read the blog that Dale mentions there, it's by Andy Bowden. ultramarathonrunning.com.au. And again, it's an interesting article just about how some people are able to keep running and never seem to DNF and others struggle. So you may want to have a look at that as well. It's good to have David McClure with us again for our latest instalment. It was 4 weeks ago that we spoke to David the first time and found out a little bit about him and a little bit about his aims and his plans for the race this year. So thanks for joining us again, David. It's good to have David.
How are you doing? Nice to see you again.
And I thought I'd just start with maybe you could tell us what you've been doing over the last month since we last spoke and maybe pick out some of the things that you feel have gone well in your training over these last 4 weeks.
Yeah, sure. Last 4 weeks have been pretty good training weeks for me. I've averaged between 40 and 50 miles, which is kind of what I'd planned to do, so I haven't really missed too many sessions. I've stuck to one long training run each week. Apart from last week, I decided to do a 15 one day and a 10 the next day to see how that went. I know a lot of people think that back-to-back runs are a good way to get into and a less chance of getting injured. So unfortunately, I didn't pick a very good couple of days to do that. The weather was really bad last week, and it was more of a slog trying to get through all the slush that we had after the snow. So 15 miles that day were quite tough. And then the next 10 miles the following morning, I expected to be pretty difficult, but actually found it all right. And I don't know whether I got as good a training benefit doing that as I would have just doing the 25 miles over the one day. Let's say that's what I'd done the previous 3 weeks. I'd done, I think, a 21, a 23 and a 26 before that one. So all in all, trainings went well. Injury-wise, I had a slight problem with my back. I've got a friend whose dad is a physio, so he had a little look and he thought that the spine was impinging a little bit on one of my nerves, so he gave me some exercises to try and free that up a wee bit, and since I've stuck to doing those exercises, the pains went away, so that's good. And other than that, I haven't had any problems injury-wise, and just had a wee go at trying different things in terms of nutrition. I tried a couple of different manufacturers' gels that I hadn't tried before. Some I found that quite light, some I found that weren't for me. Would like to try eating some more what I'd call proper food rather than things like gels. So I'm going to try and do that over the next few weeks.
On those runs, have they been off road? The one last weekend when you did 15 and 10.
The plan last week was to go and do a little bit of the River Ayr track, but because of the weather was so poor, I just stuck to doing the 15 on the road. But other than that, I've got myself up to Mulgay and ran to Drimmen and back and things like that. I've tried to get off road as much as possible. Found a great place if anyone's down in Ayrshire is Eglinton Park. There's lots of different loops in there and you can do a kind of 7 mile loop, so doing a few of them as well has been really good, because I think that's where I went wrong in the past. I've done the miles but I haven't done them on the sort of terrain that I should have. I've been doing flat miles rather than learning to take walk breaks and stuff like that, or learning how to run up hills and stuff. So I think that this year is going to do me something good ahead, certainly.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big things. If you come from a road running background, it's getting used to that sense of walking a bit. And I found when I started going up on the Glenifer Braes from Paisley, from where I live in Paisley, and it's great because there's loads of gates to go through, and just simple things like getting used to going through a gate where you've got to stop and go through and then get going again. If when you're a road runner, you never really stop, do you? You just keep going. So all that's good preparation.
Yeah, I think just trying to simulate the kind of race day conditions as much as you can. I think that's one thing that I'm trying to do. And as you say, things like getting used to the gates and things like, you know, you're not going to run at all. You know where the hills are and stuff like that. It certainly has made a difference. I'm quite happy with the way training's going that way.
Yeah. Okay, well, you mentioned some points there, things that you feel have gone well over this last month. And you mentioned you're back a little bit. But is there anything that you'd look back and say, well, that didn't go quite so well, didn't quite go as I was hoping, and maybe some lessons that you can learn from that?
I think I started trying to do some tempo runs, and I found out quite early on that I was trying to do them too quickly. I got a heart rate monitor, and the heart rate was a little too high for what it should have been for a tempo run. So I learned from my mistakes that way. In terms of the long runs, I haven't had any problems, no kind of niggling injuries when I've actually been doing the longer runs. And a couple of the longer runs I've done with people, which in the past, I think I touched on it in my earlier interview, I did everything myself last year, whereas meeting more and more people now, I think doing it with other people makes such a difference. It makes the time go so much quicker and it's a lot more enjoyable. The only thing that I would say that I'm struggling with is, I think everybody that's doing the race for the first time will probably be in the same boat, is that it almost kind of overtakes your life. It's amazing how one day the whole year seems to take precedence on all the other ones. For example, I had planned to go out on the Friday night and I had a long run I'd planned to do in the kind of Sunday afternoon, and the Friday night I'm thinking, oh, I really need to be going home early. I've got a long run on Sunday afternoon. I want to be ready for that long run. So things like that. I think it's just trying to get the correct mix and not letting it overtake everything else, the family life, the social life, trying to keep that as well as making sure I get those miles in.
Yeah, I'm sure loads of people will be smiling like I am with that comment, because I think it does. It's amazing how a race like this just really gets into your head and it's all you think about. You tend to wake up thinking, oh, am I running today? Where am I going? And what am I doing? And just planning it out, but I think
it works in both ways as well, because I would say if I didn't have something of that magnitude, there's a lot of days when you might not really be bothered about doing your kind of easy 6-7 mile runs that you've got planned, and having something like that does get you out. It does motivate you to think, right, well, I need to make sure I do everything in my training to give myself the best possible chance. I'm kind of looking at it slightly different as well, is that thinking that as long as I've put all the effort into it pre-race, whatever happens on the day, I can look back and say, well, I did my best, rather than having those regrets on the day of thinking, well, I wish I'd just put a little bit more into my training. And I think that's quite important as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think, you know, if you're going to invest 6 months of your life into this, then you do want to give yourself the best chance that you can, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so as you look maybe for the next month, what have you got certain things in mind, certain key runs that you want to do over this next 4 weeks?
The longer runs are going to get a wee bit longer over the next 4 weeks. An example of I'm actually off tomorrow and the next day, so the plan is to run from Ogai to Balmaha. I'm going to stay in Balmaha and then I'm going to run from Balmaha to Tindrum. So I know that's quite a lot of mileage when I'm not used to doing that, but I plan to take it nice and easy and give myself plenty of time. I'm going to get the train back from Tindrum, so I've given myself something like 8.5 to 9 hours to get from Balmaha to Tindrum in the second day. And I think I covered it in the flying in maybe around 7 hours. So I know there's plenty of time. I don't want to feel like I'm having to rush and having to put in an awful lot of effort. I want to be able to take my time and walk when I need to walk and stuff like that. So this week, because I'm doing those two longer runs and they're back-to-back runs, I haven't planned much other running this week, because obviously those 2 days is going to get the mileage right up. Then in March, I'm going to do the D33 race up in Deeside, so that's 33 miles. So again, haven't really made up my mind whether I'm going to push that or whether just to treat it as a training run and just get the mileage in. And then going into April, I've got the Highland Fling, which I think is near the end of the month. So whether I get another kind of 30-ish or what I might do is probably two kind of 16 miles back to back. I think once a month is enough for me to be doing anything more than 30 miles. I don't think I would recover enough. I don't think I've got a big enough background in terms of clocking those miles for my body to recover. So that's really the plan now over the next 4 weeks.
Yeah, that sounds good. Have you got there's some easy weeks planned? Say, for example, after these 2 days, you're gonna have a few days easier rest and running.
Yeah, what I'm trying to stick to is 3 weeks where the mileage kind of goes up in kind of 10% increments and then drop it down by maybe 20-30%. And certainly the week after I've done a lot higher mileage, I'll certainly ease back. I probably won't do the tempo run that week. I'll change that for an easier run. Because let's say the last thing you want to do is push too hard and end up injured and then not being able to do the whole race. That's probably my biggest fear of putting all that effort in and then not actually being able to do it. I would rather take an extra 2 hours and complete it rather than not be able to do
Yeah,
it.
no, I think that's wise, David, because I think the danger is to feel as though you just got to be doing more and more. I think we need to respect the fact that if you're going to run for 50 miles over 2 days, then you need to allow your body to recover from that to be able to do the
Yeah.
next one. So, I would definitely agree that it's important to do that. Yeah.
I think it's just everybody's the same, just trying to get that
Yeah.
balance between getting the miles in and overtraining. Certainly would love to do more mileage, but I certainly don't think that my base has been big enough. I haven't been running for, let's say I've only been running for 18 months, whereas some guys that I've been running doing this for 10, 15, even 20 years. Their base is going to be a lot bigger than mine, and they can get away with doing 100-mile weeks, whereas I certainly know that I wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, excellent. And then another question I thought I'd ask you is about obviously we're into February, middle of February now. So if you think about you've got a long run in March, a long run in April, another long run in May. That's only three long runs in a sense. And when I'm talking about long runs, over 30 sort of miles.
Yep.
So they're the times that you really need to be thinking about your nutrition, particularly, and what your strategy is going to be. And you want to be able to try things out in those runs. So, you mentioned earlier about wanting to try more real food than gels, particularly, for the full race. So, have you got any more thoughts about sort of where you're at now in the sense of fueling yourself for the race?
Yeah, I think there's two things is what to fuel myself with. I think liquid wise, I'll probably just stick to water with an electrolyte tablet in it. I think my stomach would be all right on that for a long time. And in terms of food, how much and how often is certainly something that I'm going to try and experiment with over the next couple of days on these kind of longer runs. I'm going to try and set myself an idea of maybe a couple of hundred calories an hour. The thought of that sounds like it's going to be a wee bit too much for me, but I'd like to try it and see how I get on with that. In terms of, I'm going to make up some sandwiches and stuff, and I'll try some different things like peanut butter and jam, and maybe try. I've got some small kind of pasta pots to try out as well. I haven't really used anything like that before. I've quite a sweet tooth. I prefer sweet things, which is great when you do all these mileage. You can get away with it a little bit more. But again, up to a point, you have too much sweet things, and then it can start to play havoc in your stomach. So, as I say, just try a couple of different things out over the next couple of days. The big thing for me is to try and eat little and eat often, and see how I go with that. Yeah,
no, and that's good advice, and we're trying. I would say, David, that I found, and it's like you were saying about the drinks. You know, you can drink them for a while. I know on the very first West Hallamway I did, I thought, oh, I can manage on electrolyte drinks all the way through, but I only had one flavour, and it was okay for 10 hours, but when you get up to 20 hours, then you just, obviously I was just absolutely fed up of the same. So and that's the same with food. There's been times when I thought, right, this is the answer, whether it's baked beans or whether it's whatever it is, and that's what I thought, right, that's what I'm going to try and rely on. But I've discovered that it's variety that your body needs. If you think you have what you have for breakfast, what you have for lunch, what you have for your main meal at night, it's variety. And your body needs that variety. And I think the same in a run. And I would definitely recommend that you try and, you know, try as many different things as you can and have them available. Because there might be something that you think, oh, this works, you know, this gave me lots of energy, but you can't rely on that for 95 miles.
Yeah. Well, I think it's quite interesting is reading the previous race reports of yourself and other people is what works one year, then you can't face it, or it might work for the first half of the race and then that's the last thing. So I think you're right, it's just trying to try a lot of different things. And then, I mean, the great thing I think about the West Hallamway is because you've got that support team, you're not having to carry all that stuff. So you're better to have all the stuff and have a lot of choice rather than just having one or two things. And then you might want something that day that you haven't even thought of. It might be something completely random. So I think just having lots of different things to choose from is definitely the way to go. But when you're doing a training run, then it's a little bit more difficult because you're carrying the stuff that you can't take loads of things. But I think it's just trying things that you feel are going to work, and definitely things that you could certainly discount. There might be things that don't quite agree with me. I know other people have kind of struggled with pasta stuff, but as I say, we'll see how we go with it, and then I'll make a decision on that.
Yeah, and it's during these training runs that you do want to try these things out. You know, I think that's really good advice. Yeah. Well, sounds though you've really thinking this through, and you're working, you know, with your training. It's been sensible progression. Your food, you're thinking about things as well. So, well done so far. It's
thank you. A lot of balls. I think. I wouldn't like to have done the race 10 years ago when all that information wasn't so easy to get a hold of because of the internet and Facebook and stuff like that. You can get so much information now, which is great, whereas the guys that were doing it 10, 15 years ago, they're just guessing at it, I think, and I certainly would have no chance of even being able to get a kind of training schedule together or think about the things to eat. So it's been great, and I'd certainly advise everybody to get on the Facebook page because there's so much good information there, and I've certainly found that it's helped me over the last kind of 8 weeks.
Yeah. Have you got plans to come up to Glasgow for the Inspiration Night? Is that an evening that can work out for you?
Yeah, I'm going to get along. Myself and my girlfriend, who's going to be part of my support team, are going to come up to the Glasgow one. Obviously, living in Irvine, that suits us a bit better. So yeah, I'll be come up, and it'll be good to meet you in person and to meet some other people that are interested about the race and are doing the race. So I'm really looking forward to that night,
Yeah.
John.
So for those who haven't quite gathered, that's on Tuesday, the 19th of March. It's at Cathcart Trinity Church. All the details are on the website, how to get there and stuff. So that will be, I think that should be a really good evening. And the ones we've had in Edinburgh have been, there's been big numbers there. And we've always wanted to have one else go because it's a long way to travel from, from Glasgow, never mind from Irvine, to get across there on a, certainly on a weeknight. So I think it should be a good turnout at the Glasgow one, I think.
Yeah, I'm looking forward
Yeah.
to it.
Okay, well, thank you again, David, and
No
we'll pick this
problem.
up again in another month's time. And by then, you'll have done your 2 day, next 2 days, and you'll have done the D33. So that will be interesting just to get a feel of how those training runs went and the D33 race. And we'll do it a few weeks before the fling. So again, we'll be able just to get a feel of where you're up to.
Sure, no problem at all.
So thank you. Well, it's good today for our podcast. We've got Caroline Mackay and at the other end of the screen. And I met Caroline, I think, at least twice I can remember. The first one was when we were running the Jebra Ultra last year, and Caroline was a fair bit ahead of me. And then suddenly I saw this figure coming out of the field saying, "Which way do we go?" And so we ran together for a while, didn't we? And then you were finishing a lot stronger than I was, so you pushed on and had a good run there. And then just a couple of weekends ago, you joined myself and Katrina, and we had a good long training run from Tyndrum and back and then back again. So it was good to meet you there, Caroline. And I thought it'd be really good just to interview Caroline this time and find out a bit about West Highland Way experience, and also this year she's got a big race that she's doing, not in this country but in the States, and we'll come on to that in the meantime. But thank you very much for joining us. And I
No
thought, first of
problem.
all, if you could just introduce yourself for those who don't know you, just give us a little bit of background about who you are.
Sure thing. Hi there, everyone. I'm Caroline, obviously. I am living in Edinburgh at the moment. I'm originally from the Isle of Mull up on the west coast. And I work in Edinburgh for the Royal Botanic Garden as development manager, so I'm a fundraiser essentially. And got into ultra running, what to be about 3 years ago now. So 2010 was my first ultra, I think. So it's just been a bit of a roller coaster since then, really.
Yeah. And do you go straight into ultras, or did you start with 5Ks and 10Ks, or how did it work?
I actually, when well, a couple of years after I moved to Edinburgh, I went to university in Manchester and started a bit of running through uni, but not much. Had quite an unhealthy lifestyle at uni, and got into running. Started doing a few kind of 5Ks, a bit more racing when I finished university and kind of became a wee bit healthier. And then I moved to Edinburgh a couple of years after that and started kind of taking it a bit more seriously and getting outdoors a lot more. And I joined the Edinburgh Triathlon Club initially to join their track sessions to do a bit of speed work. I wasn't really interested in getting into tri, but I joined their kind of running sessions and then started racing a bit more in kind of half marathons, and then I took on a marathon. And then I kind of got into duathlon. I had a wee bit of a kind of aside competing in duathlon, and that was in, what would it have been, 2008, 2009.
So that's cycling running, is it?
Yeah, duathlon is basically without swimming, so it's just cycling and running. So standard duathlon involves a run and then a bike, 40k bike, and then sorry, a 10k run, 40k bike, and then a 5k run at the end. So I did that for about a year, and then but really my heart was in running, so went back into that, and then started up running in 2010, and I just kind of really fell into it and found that was what I love to do. So yeah,
And that first one, which ultra was that?
the first well the first one wasn't actually. I don't know if I can call it an ultra race, really. It was more just an ultra distance run with my friend Greg, who is from Ballater, and it's always been an ambition of his to kind of run from Aberdeen, where he went to school, back out to his parents in Ballater, which is I think it's about 43 miles. And so he kind of persuaded me to do this after we'd both done a marathon together, and with a kind of a small group of friends and a support team just cycling next to us, we did that just one day. So that was kind of a wee inaugural Greg Wilkie race. But after that, got into kind of the official racing, and I think my first was a D33, which is obviously in the same area as that first run, so it's quite special actually, in early 2011. And then after that, I just loved it so much, I started kind of racing all the Suns races that year. I think I did, well, a lot of it. I think I did six Suns races and a couple of other non-Suns races, so did the Highland Fling and Speyside Way and the River Airway and a few others on top of that. So yeah, that was a really good introduction to ultra running.
Yeah. And then last year you ran the 2012 West Highland Way.
Yeah,
Tell us a
I
little bit
did.
about that race and how it went.
Yeah, so having done all these ultras in 2011, I kind of thought, I'd always said when I started ultra running, I just think it's incredible the people that take on the West Dalloway race, but I didn't think it was for me. I don't think I had the confidence to take that on. Obviously, in the first year of starting running that distance, it just didn't seem like it was something I could do. And then it's amazing how just through a few races, you kind of gain confidence, about your own kind of ability. And yeah, I kind of thought towards the end of, well, yeah, I think probably autumn 2011, I started to kind of think about it and thought about kind of signing up for the 2012 race. And it just all happened. A few of my friends were kind of doing the same, and there's a group of us kind of thinking of taking it on for the first time. One of my friends had actually tried it in 2011 and not finished, so he was really keen to go ahead and finish it in 2012. So we signed up, and I mean, going back to the start of the race, or even before we actually started, it was really difficult. I don't think I had the best prep for that race. I'd taken on quite a lot in spring of that year, which included a wee kind of personal expedition running around the coastline of Mull, which was in April last year. So obviously a couple of months before the race, I think probably naively I thought that'd be really good training, but it was 3 days solid of running on tarmac for up to 12 hours a day, very difficult terrain, lots of hills, and it rained constantly for 3 days. It didn't stop, and that was very tough on my body. And it was a difficult kind of month before I actually got to the start line of the West Dalloway race. I hardly slept for 2 days before, which didn't help. I got to the start line, and I just wanted to go sleep in our support crew vehicle. So, and obviously the forecast was terrible, and we all knew it was going to be raining pretty much, at least for the first night and part of the next day. So that wasn't, for me, that wasn't even the biggest issue, because I just ran around Mull in 3 days of solid rain, and I was kind of used to it. And I thought, if I've done that, I can kind of take this on. But I think really not being rested properly or not having the sleep that I needed was the biggest issue. But seeing all that, I started well, actually. And as soon as you get wet and your feet are wet, you accept it and you think, I'm going to get on with this. The weather can't get any worse. We were running past the beech tree inn, I remember, just splashing through puddles, and just, it was so heavy, the rain, it was just torrential. But I started to enjoy it after I'd accepted it and everything and got up Connick, and the sun was, well, not the sun, but it was becoming light as we were kind of just getting to the top of Connick Hill. And I remember being really surprised at how early it was getting light. And it was just, it was a bit of a party up there. It was amazing, everyone just splashing through puddles and basically, yeah, hiking up a river up Connick Hill. And that was a really good section for me, and I'd really enjoyed it. And then I think went through a bit of a difficult patch after Balmaha, because it started getting so midgy, and I don't think I was, I think hopefully I'll be giving some advice on the people who are doing it for the first time, as in what not to do, maybe, in terms of, I wasn't prepared for the midges at all. My support crew were offering me, repellent and everything, and I was saying, oh, I'll be fine. I honestly didn't expect that they would be biting me as I was running, so they were pretty bad. Yeah, you know what it's like, it's ups and downs throughout the whole race, and that was a down, and then I had another up later on. Started getting a few kind of feet problems just because of my feet being completely macerated really from the rain. They started around Tynedrum, but my crew patched me up and strapped the feet up and had a really good section after that up until, I think, Tynedrum to Bridge of Orkey was actually my best of the whole race, and I ran really strongly, really steadily, and felt good, and I actually started to think after the difficult first half that I could finish. But from Bridge of Orkey to Glencoe was okay. I had obviously support runner from there, I had my friend Greg again joining me. And we were okay up until Glencoe, but at Glencoe I really started to kind of lose it a wee bit. I think I'd let myself get too cold, and I hadn't actually changed my clothes at all, just because I wanted to get on. I didn't want to waste time at the checkpoints at all. I just wanted to get on. But by the time they'd actually fed and washed me and everything at Glencoe, and I started to walk down the hill, but I was shivering uncontrollably, and I wasn't aware that I was so cold, because I was quite confused. And when I read about the kind of first signs of hypothermia now, I actually think it was probably setting in. If I hadn't changed and if I'd gone up the staircase. But luckily Greg, this is, the whole importance of a support crew, luckily Greg noticed, and he said, you need to get some more clothes on, you can't go on like this. So went back to the checkpoint, got changed, and it was, that really kind of sorted me out. So we kind of got through the next section, a lot of hiking in that one. My feet problems were getting worse. I was absolutely convinced that the whole underside of both feet were covered in blisters by the time I got to Kinlochleven. I was convinced, and I refused to take my shoes off because I didn't want to see what state they're in. And so we called ahead and told the rest of the crew to ask if Chris was available to see the doctor at Kinlochleven, so I could basically get him to kind of, sort them out and strap them up again and just basically help me to finish. I've got to Kinlochleven and he took my shoes and socks off, and there was absolutely nothing on the underside of my feet. It was weird. It's just like I'd been walking on broken glass for, miles and miles, but there was nothing. They were just kind of deep kind of marks where it's basically like this macerated feet. They were just kind of really, really, kind of cut up just by the water. He strapped my feet up, and as soon as I stopped at Kinlochleven, I think that was a mistake in itself, because as soon as I kind of lay down in the stable, I thought I was going to be sick, and I was in the point of just passing out because I was so dizzy and lightheaded. And he explained, when I could actually hear what you're saying to me, he explained that it's actually quite normal for when you've been running so long, your heart rate's been going at such a kind of rate. Your body's just been working overtime for hours and hours and hours, and as soon as you stop, your heart rate goes so low that some people pass out or they're sick. And so he said, actually, it won't feel like it, but you probably will be okay if you keep going, and if you start being sick on the actual trail when you're you know out there again, then that's not a good thing. But basically, if you get going again, you probably won't feel sick anymore. So that was fine. And he kind of let me go on. Much to my team's surprise, I think. they saw the state of me and they thought he was kind of just going to say, no, just, you know, keep her here. But, you know, full respect to him, he wants people to finish, I think. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, kept going. And, I mean, it's not really that much to say about the last section. Second last section, up to Lindavra, we just kind of plodded on. I can't remember the exact split for that, to be honest, but it took a long time. Greg was amazing. I don't think I would have been able to do it without him. He just kept talking to me the whole time and, you know, picking up when I stumbled, and we got up to Lindavra and didn't stop at all at that checkpoint at all, because I knew that I'd be sick or pass out or something. I just thought, I just need to keep going. I just need to keep my heart rate up until I can finish it at Fort William. And from Lindavra, I don't know, it must have been about a mile past Lindavra, I just felt the searing pain up my Achilles, and we were going up a really steep incline at that point. And I just knew I'd done something to my Achilles tendon. And Greg was reassuring me, saying, oh, you haven't, you know, Achilles injuries, especially, you know, Achilles tears, they normally happen when you're playing kind of, you know, a sport, like a racket sport, tennis, squash or something, and it's a sudden injury. You're not going to do it when you're just hiking up a hill. But it really didn't feel like that at all. It felt like I'd torn something. And every step I took that was not on flat ground was just agony in that foot. So I basically walked the rest of it in, as I know a lot of people do anyway. it wasn't even a walk, it was just a bit of a stumble. And got there, and yeah, that was it really. I think it was 26 hours 45, so the only goal I'd achieved out of all the ones I set was finishing, and that was fine. I was just so happy to finish by that point. I'm so happy that I'd kind of done it, especially after what happened in those last few miles. I honestly couldn't have cared less about my time. So that was it really. And I mean, a few days after, obviously went to the physio, and he said I did have a slight tear in my Achilles on that side, so I basically had to lay off running for quite a wee while there, and it's all healed now, thank goodness. But yeah, I think I'm obviously not doing the race this year, but I'm really keen to get back out there and give it another shot 1 year. And you know, you just learn so much from an experience like that, and it wasn't all positive, but it's something, you know, I'll remember forever.
Well, congratulations, because I think it was a tough year last year with the weather-wise, and obviously the way you battle through things. And but that sense of getting to the end, the confidence that will give you for other things is great. And I'm sure when you come back to the West Highland Way, we'll be expecting great things from you with the experience that you'll gain from that one.
No pressure.
So you decided to do something different for 2013. So do you want to tell us a little bit about your exciting race for this year?
Sure thing. Yeah, I've been extremely lucky, really, in being selected in the lottery for the Western States 100 in California, which is a weekend after the West Highland Way. I actually thought it was the same weekend, but no, it's the 29th of June. So I'd obviously entered the lottery last year, not really thinking I ever had a chance, because I'd read all the stats, like everyone else who enters it, and I think you have a 7% chance of getting selected for the first time when you only have one ticket. So people can enter, and if they enter for a year and haven't been selected, then they get an extra ticket the next year, etc. So I only had one ticket in there, so still feeling really fortunate about that. And it kind of, yeah, obviously cemented my plans for this year. Everything is kind of geared up to kind of training for the Western States now. It is obviously going to be my peak race. So I'm just keen to make the most of the opportunity, really. I mean, I don't know if I'll get to do it again. And I'm keen to kind of just put my absolute best effort in on the day. And so that's kind of started already in terms of the training that I'm doing, and lifestyle as well. So just kind of bringing everything together to try and get my body into the best condition it can be, and my mind.
Yeah. I'm sure most people have heard of the Western States, but I think I'm right in saying it's probably the first one in the States, wasn't it? That was 100 miles, and initially it was a race for horses.
It was.
Over a certain trail, and then one guy, his horse was lame, so he decided to run it. A guy called Gordy, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he ran it the first time, and no one thought you could run 100 miles over that terrain, and he proved you could. And over the years, it just developed, didn't it?
Yeah, it did, and it was one of the first races that kind of I suppose persuaded people in the public that running 100 miles is actually kind of physically possible. So it kind of did start, I suppose, an international trend in 100 mile races. And I think this year is the 40th running of it, so it's amazing it's actually been going for that long when you think about it.
Yeah. And I think is it a 375? That's the limit,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, and that's supposedly it's never going to increase. So even though obviously it's a really popular race and you know, it's had a lot of profile around the world, it's been written about in books, it's been in a film now. There's the recent launch of Unbreakable, which was a film about the 2010 running of it, and in particular the battle between Jeff Rose and Anton Kapriska and Killian.
Yep.
So have you seen that?
I have, yes. Yeah, it's great.
It's an incredible film, yeah.
Now, you were saying just before there that you want to give the Western States your best shot. You know, you've been fortunate to get a place, and you want to make the most of it. For those who want to find out a bit more and follow your progress, you have a blog, don't you?
I do.
Chapters in it.
I do, yeah. It's chapters in running.blogspot.co.uk.
Yeah, so I'd recommend that people have a look at that as well. You can find that through the West Hallam Way blogs site as well. And I printed out your training program here. Your last post was you put down what you plan to do over the next number of months before the race. Mm-hmm. So do you want to tell us just a little bit about your thinking behind your training and some of the races that you've got planned as well in preparation for doing the Western States?
Sure. So really, I've tried to make my training plan as specific as possible to the race, as much as it can be without actually having the luxury of being close to the trail and being able to train on the trail. That's the one drawback of being in Scotland. But I suppose the main elements of my plan are really focusing on hill training, but not just uphill, really focusing on the downhill, because on all accounts of people that have run the States before, the downhill is what really kills you and what can kind of turn a good start into a really difficult race later on. And I think there's 22 just under 23,000 feet of downhill running. And I think it's 18,000 feet of ascent. So there's a lot more descent in the race. And obviously really need to condition my muscles for that. And so, at least a couple of times a week, especially on the weekends, I'm focusing on, runs in the West Highland Way, in the Pentlands, even on Arthur's Seat and Carlton Hill, which are close by to where I live in Edinburgh, just kind of really hammering the downhills on that and trying to get as much hill training in as I can. Back-to-back runs, I suppose that kind of fits in with the hill training. I'm trying to do between one and two weekends a month of kind of long back-to-back training runs, which is what I was doing for the West Hannah Way, really. So it fits in really well with the people that are training for that this year, and I've been joining in with a few runs. I'm looking to do a few more. One of the key weekends for that will be the end of May weekend, which I'm planning to run the whole West Hannah Way on. So fits in nicely with the bank holiday. So I'll be doing that, just kind of taking on the whole trail and doing that in 2 days. Another of the elements, I'm doing a bit of speed training, not too much. I wasn't really doing any last year, but I did want to kind of integrate it into my plan this year just because of other races I'm doing as well. I just want to kind of work on that. And I think in training for the West Hannah Way last year, I really let the speed interval training drop and I slowed down. And I've noticed that over, the long term, and I'm just keen to get that back a bit. I used to race a lot, a lot of shorter races, and I wouldn't be anywhere close to getting my PBs from those races now. So I just want to try and kind of keep up at least one kind of speed interval session a week as well. But in terms of kind of training and conditioning myself for the actual environment out there in California, I'm doing some heat training, and that's out at Napier University. They've got this amazing specialist kind of training facility, which is kind of for, I think they train the elite Scottish mountain biking team there. So basically for any kind of athletes who want to go out and who are maybe training for an international race and they need to train in hot conditions or they need to train in high altitude, they've got this chamber which it can fit kind of up to four people, and they've got treadmills and stationary bikes and everything, and they can alter the conditions in it up to, I think it's up to 50 degrees Celsius, and minus 50 as well. So if you're going somewhere cold, altitude as well. I can't remember what the altitude is they can make it, but yeah, basically they can kind of alter the conditions in that. So it's really specific to the type of environment you're going out to race in. So
have you started that yet?
No, I'm starting on Friday. So I had a wee taster session, which was interesting. And that was only, I think it was 28 degrees or something. And that felt hot enough. I'm going to be training at 36. It's going to be a bit of a shock to the system, especially after a Scottish winter. So we'll be seeing what that's like on Friday. It's just an hour, so even if it's horrendous, it's just an hour and a couple of times a month up until May and June, and then I'll be doing quite intensive sessions of 1.5 to 2 hours, and that'll be obviously in pretty much the hottest we expect it to be in the canyon section of the Western States, which is traditionally the hottest section. So training in kind of 36 degrees, and just trying to in general learn how to drink lots when running, because I'm absolutely terrible at drinking. Even when I'm racing in Scotland, I don't drink enough and I usually end up a wee bit dehydrated. So I really, really need to watch that with the Western States, because that can just kind of end people's races, and it's little things like that you need to practice with as well. So that's about it. I think they're the main elements of the plan.
Have you got some races planned in that training program?
Yeah, there are. So I'm kind of generally a mix between quite organised and completely impulsive. So I actually ended up racing just this weekend past, which wasn't in the plan, but a couple in January and February, which were. So I raced, starting off in January, I raced the country to capital. And then that was down south. That was down in England, a Go Beyond Ultra race. And another of their races, the Thames Trot, I raced in early Feb. And then just this weekend past, I did the Northumbria Ultra, which was a lovely race, beautifully sunny day, running across sand dunes. It's just idyllic. But the proper kind of training plan races are the Highland Fling. I need to do that again this year. So that's obviously coming at the end of April. And that's it for races before the big day, really. Just going to be focusing on the training plan.
Yeah. And as far as just going out to the States, are you going early to give yourself a chance? Because you start off at quite a high altitude, don't you?
Yeah,
So you
we do.
acclimatize a bit. So are you planning to go out early?
I am, and that's another kind of major part of it, I think, is just as well as obviously doing as much specific training as you can in Scotland. You know, nothing compares to actually being there and getting to know the trail, you know, really familiarizing with the area. So I'm going out 10 days before, which is as much as I could kind of manage to do really with time off work and everything. And I think they say that, you know, your body really acclimatizes to heat in the 2 weeks directly before a run. So hopefully that will kind of do the trick. And just, I'm not obviously planning to do any kind of intensive training on the course in those 10 days, but I'm planning to get out and do some easy hikes if they're possible on the trail and just get out. And I'm staying actually in Auburn for the first long weekend I'm there, which is the end of the trail. That's where you finish up. And I'll be kind of hiking out from that end to get to know that part. And then I'm going to stay in a friend's trailer in Truckee, which is just a couple of miles from Squaw Valley, which is where the race starts. And then I'll be spending a week there. So that's brilliant. I mean, I'm really excited about kind of getting that experience right before. And I think that'll really help my confidence because I'll know where I'm going for a start, which is always a benefit, hopefully. I don't know if I'll be able to cover the whole 100 miles in, you know, in 10 days before the actual race. It's unlikely, but hopefully kind of the major segments I'll kind of know a lot better.
In a sense, if you could cover the second half of the race, 'cause I tend to, that's when I think the first half you tend to be with people more, and also you're more aware. It's the second half when you're starting to lose it a bit. If you know what's coming, it makes a big difference, I think.
Yeah, totally.
So if there was an option, if you could cover the second half of the race in those
That's
walks,
obviously
I
the
think.
preference. Yeah, totally.
Now, as far as the support of that goes, you can have a support runner, can't you, from a certain
You
point?
can't.
So have you got a backup team? Have you got people who are going to help you?
I do. Yeah, I do. I've got, you're only allowed one support runner, but they can alternate with another one at kind of agreed checkpoints, aid stations. So you're allowed one support runner from Forest Hill, which is 62 miles into the race. And then I think there's three or four aid stations after that, up until the 100 miles, where that support runner can then swap with another. So I've actually got a husband and wife team who have volunteered to help me and run with me. So I think they're going to swap over and they're bringing their whole family out. So they'll have their kids there and their brother. It was a struggle to get friends and family out there, to be honest, what with work and a few other things. So I actually joined a really useful forum called the Ultra List, which is a kind of forum of, I think there's over 2,000 ultra runners on there, and it's a US kind of forum. And people, you know, kind of share info about races and, you know, race reports, and just it's just basically a forum where people can kind of you know, ask questions and get to know people and kind of yeah. So it's I thought it'd be, in fact it was Paul Houston, Western Away runner, who kind of suggested it, and I thought it'd be really useful to kind of get onto that and ask, you know, if there's anyone kind of wanting to crew or support run. So this husband and wife team just volunteered, and they said they've both run the race before and they both run pretty good times as well. And they used to live just a couple of miles away from Forest Hill, so they know the trail like the back of their hand. So I'm really fortunate in that respect. I've actually got some crew as well. I've got a friend who lives in Reno in Nevada, which is only a couple of hours from Squaw Valley, Dan. So he's coming out to actually crew me for the first, probably only be the first kind of 60 miles, and then they'll take over from there, because I want, after the experience with the West Hanaway, I think it's really important to know that your crew is going to get some rest at some point as well. So I want to kind of I want to plan that quite carefully. And yeah, but it looks like I'll have them some good support out there, so that's fantastic.
Oh, sounds like you've got lots of things organised and they're well in hand. That's good. What about have you thought about goals for the race? Have you got a time goal, or what are you feeling about the actual event itself?
It's really difficult to make goals for, you know, especially time goals for a race that you've obviously never done and you don't know the trail, you know, at all. I've read so much about it, but you never know how you're going to cope with the actual conditions. You know, the weather that California is going to throw at me. I've got no idea. I've been out there a few times, and I've run quite a lot in California as well, actually. But I really don't know how it's going to go. My main goal is to run the States in under 24 hours. And you know, it would be amazing if I could do faster than that. But I think that I'm going to stick with that as a conservative goal, I think, rather than, you know, after the West Hanaway, I made myself a lot of ambitious goals and didn't quite reach them. So I think here I'm just going to have one conservative one and see how I go. I think the organisation of the actual race is just incredible as well, because they give you this participant guide and they have guide times for if you want to finish, and I think under 24 hours and 30 hours, and there's, you know, there's guide times for every single aid station throughout the whole race, and I think there's 25 aid stations, so it's an amazingly well supported race. You know, they say actually you don't even need a crew, it's not an essential thing to have a crew because it is so well supported. So I mean, in terms of the timings, I've got a few timing options that I've obviously given to my crew in terms of when I expect to be in at certain aid stations, but is going to be largely a kind of suck it and see thing on the day, I think.
Excellent. Well, it'd be really good maybe to try and do another interview a few weeks before you go, just to see how your training's gone, and you'll have done the fling by then as well. So it'd be good just to get a little update on that. And then obviously it'd be great to get you after the race, and you can tell us all about it and how it went, and hopefully tell us about that sub 24-hour time that you hope to do.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Well, just before we finish, I'd like just to do our quickfire questions. And these are a series of questions that I try and ask people who've done the West Highland Way race. And this is particularly thinking about running the West Highland Way race. So your preferences, no right or wrong answer, but just what you prefer on these different things. Okay. So shoes, do you prefer road shoes or trail shoes?
Definitely trail shoes.
Right. Food, have you got a favourite food to keep you going when things are getting really tough and you need a bit of energy?
Trying to think what I ate in last year's race. I ate a lot of peanut butter sandwiches and
Italian water. Which do you prefer, a hydration pack or a water bottle?
It's funny, I've always preferred running just with water bottles, well, just meaning with one bottle, but just recently I've been training with a hydration pack, and I actually think I prefer that now. It's one of Ultra Aspire's packs, and it's so light and designed for the female form, and it's an amazing fit, and you hardly feel it on your back. So I actually think I'm completely converted to that, and I think in any long distance race I'd race with that on.
Right. Would you have water or energy drink as your main supply of fluid?
Water, definitely water with electrolytes. I'm not a massive fan of energy drinks. They're just too sweet and sugary.
Yeah. Do you take salt tablets?
No, I don't. I just try and eat, you know, salty foods, just try and snack on salty things. So, soft kind of pretzels are brilliant, I find. So normally have those available.
Do you run with a watch, a Garmin, or do you like to run with no timepiece?
I'm actually running free at the moment, only because my Garmin broke, but I'm actually loving the experience of just running without a watch. It's actually quite liberating. Although when I finished Northumbria at the weekend, I had absolutely no idea what time I come in at or anything, and your brain's always in such a mess that you forget to ask. But I think I am definitely going to get another timepiece before the Western States, and I'm actually hankering after the Ambit that you've got, the Suunto Ambit. So I think I'm going to maybe treat myself to one of those before June.
Yeah. No, I think having used that for the last few weeks, it's certainly on the trails, it's great because it gives you an altitude better as well and a bit a longer battery life.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Support crew, would you have one or two teams for the West Highland Way?
It's funny, I really didn't think that I would need two teams last year. I only had one the whole way through because I honestly thought that I would be able to do it in a faster time. But I think now, in the future, when I do it again, hopefully, I would definitely organise for two. Even if I do it in a faster time, I think my team were just absolutely exhausted, and I ended up feeling guilty when I was running on the trail for, you know, quite a while, just because I was worrying about them, and I don't think that's good for anyone. So I think two teams in the future, yeah.
Yeah. Have you got a favourite section of the race?
Oh, that's a difficult one. I don't know. I've got a couple, actually. I think...
You can have two, okay. That's okay.
I think Connick Hill is definitely a favourite. It's just that vantage point to get the view. It's just lovely, and especially in the race when it was getting light, and I think at that point we had a bit of hope that the weather was going to improve. and then I think just in terms of where I had a good run, and I know it's probably quite a boring section if that exists on the race, but between Tynedrum and Bridge of Orkney, it's obviously one of the flatter sections. I just ran really well, and I kind of got my confidence back that I could finish, so yeah.
Good. Are you someone who listens to music or podcasts or books while you're running, or do you like just to have nothing in your ears as you
run? I don't really listen to music or anything really when I'm racing, but when I'm training I do a lot. I listen mainly to podcasts now, actually. There's a few really good ones that have a lot of features about the Western States. So there's the likes of Ultra Runner Podcast and Trail Runner Nation, and Talk Ultra is a brilliant one as well. So I find them quite inspiring when you're trying to go out and do a long, hard effort. I think when people are talking in your ears about ultra running and about what you can do, and you know, there's interviews with amazing runners, I think it's really inspiring, and I've kind of chosen them much over music recently.
Well, your next long run, you can listen to yourself.
That's so inspiring.
Have you got a favourite mantra that you use to keep yourself going?
Oh, I don't think I do, actually. No, I don't have a specific mantra, just more telling myself, you know, you can do it, you know, just keep going, just, you know, yeah, just get on with it.
Yep. What thing do you look forward to most when you're coming to the end of the race, when you've finished?
Probably if it's a long race, you know, and you've had a career and everything, and probably just seeing your friends and family and you know, catching up with them and sharing the experience with them, I suppose. my new kind of post-race ritual is become a hot bath, and that's something I do after every race now. I absolutely love it.
Good. And then finally, have you got a final tip to maybe people who are doing the West Highland Way race for the first time? Think back to how you felt this time before the race. Have you got any tips that you'd like to leave to runners?
Oh, it's really difficult because, you can try and give advice to people, but at the end of the day, if they're anything like me, they're going to be super nervous beforehand and, you know, not able to sleep either. So I would say try and get as much rest beforehand as possible. Try not stress out. Just take it easy. Don't give yourself lots to do at the last minute. Don't set really ambitious goals for yourself. I mean, it's good, you know, your advice that you've given on the podcast, John, is good of having three different options, three different goals. So bronze, silver, gold. I think that's a really, that's a gem of advice for people. Wear a midi net. That would have really improved my race, I think, just having a midi net on. Just kind of take it as it comes and keep it steady and just think about each section as it comes up and try not to think about, you know, just the end and just finishing and the big picture. Just think about the small picture for most of the race.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Caroline, and we wish you all the best over the next few months as you prepare for the Western States. As I say, we'll catch up with you before you go, and once you've done it as well, it'll be really interesting to see how that maybe how it compares with the West Highland Way as well. It'll be quite interesting. And as I say, if people want to follow your progress, you're going to be faithfully writing up on your blog,
yes,
are you?
Hopefully. I'm a bit of an erratic blog writer, but I'll try and update it regularly.
Good. Okay, well, thank you very much, and as I say, all the best for your
thank
training.
You.
For carrying water, would you prefer a hydration pack or a water bottle?
It's funny, I've always preferred running just with water bottles, just meaning with one bottle. But just recently I've been training with a hydration pack, and I actually think I prefer that now. It's one of Ultra Aspire's packs, and it's so light and designed for the female form, and it's an amazing fit, and you hardly feel it on your back. So I actually think I'm completely converted to that, and I think in any long distance race I'd race with that on.
Right. Would you have water or energy drink as your main supply of fluid?
Water, definitely water with electrolytes. I'm not a massive fan of energy drinks. They're just too sweet and sugary.
Yeah. Do you take the salt tablets?
No, I don't. I just try and eat, you know, salty foods. Just try and snack on salty things. So, soft kind of pretzels are brilliant, I find. So normally have those available.
Do you run with a watch, a Garmin, or do you like to run with no timepiece?
I'm actually running free at the moment, only because my Garmin broke, but I'm actually loving the experience of just running without a watch. It's actually quite liberating. Although when I finished Northumbria at the weekend, I had absolutely no idea what time I come in at or anything, and your brain's always in such a mess that you forget to ask. But I think I am definitely going to get another timepiece before the Western States, and I'm actually hankering after the Ambit that you've got, the Suunto Ambit. So I think I'm going to maybe treat myself to one of those before June.
Yeah. No, I think having used that for the last few weeks, it's certainly on the trails, it's great because it gives you an altitude better as well and a bit a longer battery life. Support crew, would you have one or two teams for the West Highland Way?
It's funny, I really didn't think that I would need two teams last year. I only had one the whole way through because I honestly thought that I would be able to do it in faster time. But I think now, in the future...
Yeah. Have you got a favourite section of the race?
Oh, that's a difficult one. I don't know. I've got a couple, actually. I think
you can have two. Okay. That's okay.
I think Connick Hill is definitely a favourite. It's just that vantage point to get the view. It's just lovely, and especially in the race when it was getting light. And I think at that point we had a bit of hope that the weather was going to improve. and then I think just in terms of where I had a good run, and I know it's probably quite a boring section, if that exists on the race, but between Tynedrum and Bridge of Orkney, it's obviously one of the flatter sections. I just ran really well, and I kind of got my confidence back that I could finish. So yeah,
good. And are you someone who listens to music or podcasts or books while you're running, or do you like just to have nothing in your ears as you?
I don't really listen to music or anything really when I'm racing, but when I'm training, I do a lot. I listen mainly to podcasts now. Actually, there's a few really good ones that have a lot of features about the Western States. So there's the likes of Ultra Runner Podcast and Trail Runner Nation, and Talk Ultra is a brilliant one as well. So I find them quite inspiring when you're trying to go out and do a long, hard effort. I think when people are talking in your ears about